Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to my show. I am Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and this is a place I like to bring topics I find that others are experiencing and may wish for a frank discussion of tips and solutions to improve and inspire their lives. You know, with all of my shows, and you can visit the archives and find a lot of these shows, we have a full range of topics from health and death to dating and cookies. You know, I grew up asking why in all areas of my life, and it is something I still live by today. My guests and I talk about a topic in casual conversation, so you, the listener, can feel like you are across the table from us with a coffee or tea. I welcome you, the listeners, and I hope to answer some of your questions as I speak with the guest of the day. If you would like to call into the show, please dial 424-258-9318 and then push 1 so I can see that you wish to speak with us and I'll be able to recognize that call. I would also encourage you to follow my show page and you will know what I will be touching on next and when my next show will be. So it is now time to share with you and start the show and welcome. You know, I have a really great guest today because I am so keen on food and all of the issues behind it. And I also have a wonderful product to share with you today, which I recently came across. And both of these work totally together, both the product and the company that I will be featuring today. So today I'm going to share with you a company I recently found. It helps me with my intake of omega-3, 6, and 9 oils. You know, those things that make your whole body actually work, keep it going, cell membranes, stomach, brain, heart, everything, you name it. But without the shellfish or seafood origin. And that's very important to me because I have a significant allergen and most all of the compounds out on the market are made from shellfish or seafood origin. The company is ImmunoViva. It's a seed oil company in the northern U.S. You know, the seeds of fruits and vegetables are nature's perfect defense system. We always are talking about powerful antioxidants, you know. In the seeds, they protect the plant's DNA from environmental stresses, bacteria, fungal attack, and disease. So if the seeds can do it for the plant, the seeds can also do it for us. ImmunoViva has found a way to harness the full potential of those seeds and deliver it to you in supplements, powders, and oils that are nutrient-dense without fillers, mystery ingredients, and questionable potency in the product you are using daily. The raw ingredients in ImmunoViva are literally the seeds of nature. That's all they are, is just the seeds and the oil. And they're processed in their purest form so they retain much more of their natural power. And they're processed without all of these chemicals going into the oils, into the seeds to try to extract them. ImmunoViva has a very unique way, and you can find out that information of how they process these seeds on their website. Blueberries, raspberries, cranberries, pomegranates, and grapes are all naturally high in antioxidants, but their seeds are where the real power lies. You know, and for powerful and comprehensive immune and heart support, ImmunoViva's flagship product is called Core. I have tried this product, and it is very, very strong, very, very potent. It has no extra fillers. It does not have an expiration date for years because you want it to get the product from the company. Take it right then. You're not buying cases of it to sit around forever because it was on sale. You know, Core is made from cold-pressed black cumin and black raspberry seeds, and it's loaded with antioxidants and is rich in omega-3 and 6 essential fatty acids. It actually contains dozens of different types of antioxidants, including multiple types of vitamin E. How powerful is Core? Consider this. It takes 16 pounds of raspberries to get just 1 teaspoon of seed oil. Core is truly an amazing product, and I definitely have witnessed that over the past several months. And if you have any issues with your joints or would like to move better without the strain and pain of movement, I would suggest you check out their other product called Ease. I take both every day. So check out immunoviva.com. That's immunoviva.com for more information. And if you'd like to find out more or hear more about the company, I also have a link to ImmunoViva. It is one of my past shows. It will be found in the archives on this show page. So today, my guest is Joshua Kirschenbaum of Territorial Seed Company, and their mission is to inspire you to look at your food source. Right up my alley. I love that. I am the worst person. Every grocery store I go to, I've got my camera out taking pictures, and my husband walks the other way and pretends he doesn't know me, you know? And to provide you with good seeds and equipment to grow the healthiest yield of fresh produce no matter where you live. Even if you only have a patio or a window box, you can still grow something. So welcome to my show, Josh.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sounds so exciting, doesn't it, to be talking about food and how we can actually grow it of our own and not rely on other people so we don't have that thing where, oh, well, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but they said it is, right?
You're absolutely correct. And not, I mean, there's so many benefits. That is certainly one of them, not to mention the flavor of fresh produce that you grow yourself, as well as the health benefits of actually being active and gardening.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about Territorial Seed?
Sure. Territorial Seed Company was founded in 1979 by a man named Steve Solomon, who, for those of you listening that live in the Pacific Northwest, he wrote a book called Growing Vegetables West of the Cascades, which is kind of the vegetable gardener's Bible around these parts. And he created the company with the basic idea that all of the varieties that we were to offer in the catalog are suitable for growing in our specific maritime Northwest environment and microclimate. And about 5 years after he started the company, he sold it to Tom and Julie Johns, who are still the current owners of the company. It's a family-owned and operated business. And over time, we started expanding. And so we started offering varieties that still were suitable for growing here, but also might be a little bit suitable for growing in other parts of the country, too. And so we started sending the catalog throughout the country. And nowadays, you know, with the internet, people are ordering all over the world from us. We produce a spring catalog that comes out in December. And then we also have a supplemental fall and winter catalog that comes out in June for varieties that are specifically suited for growing in cooler conditions. And then one of the main things that we kind of pride ourselves on is that we do very extensive trialing, and that's one of my responsibilities here for the company. So each year, we grow out all the varieties that we offer in the catalog, so and then I literally take the catalog out with me to the field and read the description as I'm looking at the plants, just to make sure that the information is accurate. And then we also grow it right next to potential new varieties for upcoming catalogs. So the main thing that we want to make sure about when we're offering a variety in our catalog is that it's going to perform well. And not only is it going to perform well, but it's going to be for a home gardener. Our main customers are home gardeners. We're not interested in finding a tomato variety that's going to be suitable for transporting 5,000 miles. We want something that tastes good and that is vigorous and productive.
You know, we talk so much about food. And like I said in the beginning, that is just, you know, I have the good, bad, and the ugly on the food situation. I live here now in the South. And you would think there would be tons of growing here. Well, there prior to Hurricane Katrina, there was not tons of growing here. And since Hurricane Katrina, people have come here and started growing here because now they think it's, you know, oh, well, that's the fad thing to do or whatever reason, you know, they're going to do it. But really, you know, I grew up in the Northeast and by the Poconos, by the Amish people, and there were no pesticides used on anything. And you grew things when they were in season, and when they weren't, you knew how to can or store those. And I don't ever remember buying fruits and vegetables from a grocery store. That is how I grew up. You know, and then when I moved again and I went to Arizona, I said, okay, in the desert, what's going to be here to eat, right? Because I got used to eating that way, and that's what I would expect. And what I found in Arizona was they may have had the same type foods, but they had a different presentation. Like the peaches from the Northeast were about the size of your hand, and they were dense, and they were extremely juicy. But when I got a peach in Arizona, you needed two hands, and I thought, whoa, this is really great. It's going to be good. However, had anyone really even thought about the situation, which was different, was that the peach tree itself was protecting itself. It wanted to nurture and grow that seed, so it drew in all the water it possibly could into that fruit, and when you bit into it, it was not dense at all. It was very loose, and all it really was juice. You know, so the huge difference in foods into where you live or where you are and what you can and can't grow, and I just think food is just so varying that, you know, if you can grow where you are, that's great, but also to start to learn to eat different things and experience things too. And, you know, like you said about the seeds, you know, they have to know where you can grow them and where you can't grow them.
Right, yes.
I'm not going to take that seed from Pennsylvania and try to grow it in the desert, because obviously the two separate fruits are two totally different things.
Yep, absolutely. And it is very important to know what grows well in your specific region. But what you were saying as far as trying new things is kind of interesting, because when I started here, I'm going to be completely honest with you, I was not a huge fan of Brussels sprouts. And then I actually grew
favorite.
Them myself. Yeah, I know. And now they're one of my favorites too. And it's, I think, you know, a lot of times maybe as children, things were prepared for us in a way that we don't necessarily, you know, care for. But I highly recommend to give those things another shot. And I'm a huge fan of advocating trying something new in your garden every year, something that you've never tasted before or something that you've tasted so long ago that you don't have familiarity with it as an adult. It's a great way to learn about new ways to eat, as well as new types of vegetables that grow well in your particular region.
Well, you know what I think is really interesting about your catalogs, and the reason I just absolutely love, and I know this is crazy too, I went to the store the other day and I said to the people, I would love to grocery shop and fruit and vegetable shop and all that other stuff more than I would clothing shop. So anyway, when I sit down and I look through the seed catalog, I mean, your pictures just represent the products, I mean, in just a great way. People can get an idea, and it's like eye candy looking through. It's like, man, that looks so good.
Yeah,
and if it
thanks.
Looks good to you, right then and there, you should have an eye appeal. If you've got that eye appeal, then it may be something you may want to try, you know, but you might look at something else and say, nah, maybe not, you know. There's a couple things I'd say no, maybe not, too, you
yeah,
know. But,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, but that's maybe how you could get drawn to trying something new.
Right, and that's another reason you're delving into the marketing aspect of having a seed company. One of the reasons why our catalog comes out in December, first of all, is because there's seeds. You need to start them earlier, depending on the types. So it's not just like going to a store and a nursery and buying plants. You know, from seed, it takes a little bit longer on some of these things. But the other thing is like in the winter when it's dark and gray and cold out, at least in most places throughout the country, it is really, really fun to, like, sit by the fire and look through a catalog and start planning these things out. And it's kind of hope and a reminder that spring is not too far ahead.
And, you know, some things you may see and you could say, well, you know what, I usually buy that in the can. Maybe I don't want to buy in the can this year, so I could try something different, you know? And I think that does make a big difference. And, you know, let's go back to the topic about, so I want to grow in my yard and I'm going to go to, and I'll use the word, I'm going to go to Walmart or I'm going to go to one of those places that sells lumber and I'm going to buy their little seedlings. Can you compare to that, really? Can you talk to us about that difference?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, you know, even in the seed packets that you buy at those stores, there is definitely differences in quality. So, for example, we might offer a particular variety of peas, let's say, that the same variety is offered at one of those stores. The thing is if we're buying those pea seeds from a wholesale supplier, they offer different grades and different qualities and different levels of germination. And when I say germination, I mean the percentage that will sprout. And so for us, it's really important to have the highest quality. Whereas there, it might be a little bit less expensive, but it could potentially be floor sweepings as well that you're getting in that packet.
Right.
So that's certainly one aspect of it. And then the other thing, I mean, if you're buying the seedlings there, who knows how they've been treated or pampered prior to getting onto that shelf, and actually once they're on that shelf too. Most of the people that work at hardware stores aren't experts in how to raise seedlings, and so they might be doing stuff to stress those plants out that once those plants get into your own garden, they might go into shock a little bit and not perform as well either.
You know, so many people say, well, I can't grow that here. I tried it. It didn't work. And I really think that is a testimony to the quality in which you purchased it in the first place. It's mm-hmm. sort of like you say, can I take someone who loves to swim in the ocean with whales, and can I put them in the middle of the Mojave Desert? Well, I'm not so sure about that. You know, I mean, you really need to look at, you know, and nurture those plants that belong in those areas, but you can't just expect to walk out and drop a packet of seeds and just something's going to come up there.
Exactly, yes. And I guess that this would also be an appropriate time for me to say, if I can sit here and talk about doing this, I assure you that anyone listening can actually do it and can start from seed. I think a lot of times people think that, you know, you need a degree in botany to be able to start from seeds, or if you wanted to start your seeds indoors, you need an expensive lighting growing system, and it's certainly not the case at all. And that's the main thing that I wanted to kind of point out, is that anyone can do it. It just requires a little bit of know-how, but once you have that, it's really fairly easy to do.
You know, I think a lot of times people say, I don't have a big yard, too. Mm-hmm. I know you can plant, even if you just did herbs, you could do that on a window box, right?
Yep.
Or you
no
could just
excuses
do a
as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And you could actually do like a small pot outside your door and put some small tomatoes in it, and you can mm-hmm. eat them on your way in and out, or,
yep.
you know, things like that. I
yeah.
mean, it's just like you said, no excuse.
Yeah, and that's one of the trends. It's interesting, you know, you were talking about shopping for clothes earlier.
Right.
It's interesting how over the years that I've worked here, I see trends in vegetables too. And one of those trends as of late is that there's a lot of breeding work going into smaller-sized vegetable plants so that
right.
people who don't have a big yard or don't even have a yard at all and just want to grow something in a container can do mm-hmm. so successfully. In 2012, for example, we offered a new variety of zucchini called Patio Star, and it was actually specifically suited. It has a smaller plant habit. If anyone has ever grown a zucchini before, you know that mm-hmm. they can sometimes get a little unruly. And
yeah.
this is one that has a much, much smaller habit, and it's still just as productive, so you'll still be bombarding your neighbors and families and friends with your zucchini that you don't know what to do with. But it is suited for growing in a container, and it was so popular. So many people wanted that variety. And it doesn't necessarily mean, even if you have a garden, it just means that by having a more compact plant that still is productive, you can get more productivity in the space that you have. And so I think that that's one of the trends that we are seeing, in it also in some of the tomato varieties that we offer. The container varieties seem to do very, very well and are very popular with our customers.
You know, and they have a lot of these things out now where you can do tiers. You know,
uh-huh.
you could almost do tier containers or tier. You could put a piece of wire with, you know, five pots hanging on it up and down, and you could have five things, you know, growing in there too. But also the theory and the way that you grow, also like we talk about the three sisters, how you would put,
right.
you know, three plants around something and those three plants are supported and it just took up one space.
Right.
You know, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. That's the companion planting is wonderful. So, for example, let's take a tomato plant and a lettuce plant. And tomatoes tend to get, if you have a standard-sized tomato plant, they can get pretty sprawling and big. And they have a pretty decent root system to them. So they have a pretty extensively sized root system. So if you plant a tomato and then you plant lettuce around that tomato plant, lettuce actually likes it to be a little bit shadier, a little bit cooler, so that tomato plant is going to shade the lettuce out. And then lettuce also has a relatively shallow root system, so they're not going to be competing with each other, even though they're being grown next to each other. The three sisters is an example of where you take beans, corn, and a squash. And the beans can trail up the corn stalks as they're growing. And then beans also are a legume, and legumes actually are one of those wonderful types of plants that it basically creates a symbiotic relationship with bacteria that's in the soil. And in return for that legume plant, like the bean, allowing this bacteria to live on its root system, that bacteria will provide the plant with nitrogen, which is something that's needed for these plants to grow, the green growth. But then they also put extra nitrogen, usable nitrogen, back into the soil. And so the squash plant can then use, and the corn plant for that matter, can use some of those nutrients that are created by having the beans in there. It's really a great way of gardening, and it's really kind of neat when you think about how it works and how it works well.
Well, you know, you look at the drought this year and how all of the corn, they're like, oh, well, all my corn is gone and everything else from the drought. But if you look at it, it's just a single stalk and you're expecting it to survive. It's almost like sending out a five-year-old kid on the streets of New York City and said, I'll see you at the end of the 10 blocks, you know? So, I mean,
how did you know my mom did that to me when I was
young? Because I had it happen to me. But the thing is that if you turn around and you might have supported that along the way, each one giving them directions to get there, they'd make it. So maybe, you know, it's not always about, oh, I have a big, huge plot of land and I'm going to throw this all corn down and, you know, that's only what I want and then I'll string some beans along the end. Well, you know, the amount that you may get from that, your gross product, might be very limited if the times are getting bad and the weather is bad. But if you turn around and maybe support it, you know, beans going around it and squash, you're looking at it, those roots are protected until that plant gets a little bit bigger. So there is a force of protection between all three where maybe they didn't need to do all of those millions and millions of acres of corn if they had conciced it down and maybe, you know, done a lot of this co-planting. Maybe we would have had better yields.
Right. And that's another thing. I mean, you know, the feasibility on those thousands of acres of cornfields, they're also using a lot of chemical fertilizers and a lot of chemical pesticides and herbicides. This is something for us as home gardeners to do very easily and get wonderful results from it.
Well, you know, I have my nephew has an organic farm in Upper Massachusetts. And he does this type farming because he has a lot of land. He's got tons of land, acres and acres. But he found that, you know, like I said, instead of stretching it all out, it was better to be concise together. You know, if you're standing there right in front of the beans to take care of the squash and then look at the corn, you were in one place. Instead of going to three times that area to take care of business and hope for the best.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that brings up another point. So I was talking about our trials earlier. We have a 44-acre certified organic farm. So all of our trials are done in an organic manner. And trust you me, if you were to ever come out and visit it, you would see that they're not pampered at all. I promise you, you know. We want to make sure, though, that they're hardy and that they're going to persevere in someone else's home garden. And chances are they're probably going to do a lot better because on a smaller scale, people tend to pay a little bit more attention to the weeds and all of that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But one of the other things that kind of separates us out from other seed companies is that we do our own seed crop production at the farm as well. So we grow the plants, that we then harvest the seed from, clean up, and then offer in our seed packets the following year. And so that's kind of nice because we have a pretty up-close and personal relationship with the varieties that we offer in the catalog.
It's not mystery stuff you're getting.
Yes, yes. And we do get seeds from suppliers all over the world. But again, we want to, before we'll offer it in the catalog, we'll trial it to make sure that it does well. But
right.
We also do our own seed production too. So that's kind of nice and special.
Well, you know, a lot of seed companies, they'll just say, okay, well, I purchased it from somebody and I'm going to send it out to you. You know, they're just the
right.
middleman.
Right.
You know, let's stock and ship, stock and ship. And it's
yep.
like you don't do stock and ship. You do, you know, you check what you do. Just
yep.
like myself, you know, if somebody comes along with a product, I'm going to be checking it. You know,
mm-hmm.
nobody goes past me either, you know, without speaking about it.
Right.
You know, like we said about the seed oils in the beginning, you know, I had used that company for a while. So it does make a huge difference about what the quality of the seed is in the beginning.
It really does. And by the way, I found that a very, very appropriate product for you to be highlighting at the beginning.
Yes,
of the program.
Wasn't it? Well, it is very important to know that, you know, that's if your seed is not nutrient dense,
mm-hmm.
you're going nowhere. What's the point of even growing the product?
Yep, absolutely. And you know, and then you carry it on to the soil that you're growing things in and how those need to be nurtured and pampered and, well, not pampered necessarily, but they need to be filled with nutrients and organic matter and all those lovely microorganisms that make plants do so well.
So can we talk about how you would even plant? So we'll go
sure.
through this a little. So even now, myself,
mm-hmm.
here in New Orleans, they started to get a lot of farms going since Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I have my own views on that. I know a lot of them have not tested their soil. I know that ground was underwater for an extensive period of time. And I also know that anytime there's flooding, we live in Toxic Alley here from all of the chemical plants. Do you think I'm going to eat the food? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's really important to look at your dirt first. So
of course.
I know you have in your catalog, you have testing and everything for that.
Yeah, yeah, we have soil testing kits that are for home gardens. They can test the nutrients, they can test the pH level, all of those things. These are not extremely scientific tests. They're basically
mm-hmm.
just so that you have a good indication of what type of soil you have and what sort of, you know, nutrients you might want to think about incorporating in as far as organic fertilizers and things like that go. So that is certainly something that you want to do for first time in a space. If there is question, like you had mentioned about
yes.
contamination, that might be something. Local extension agencies are wonderful, wonderful resources, and pretty much every county in the country has an extension agency, and contacting them and finding out maybe a local source of getting the testing done for your soil is what I would recommend as far as the getting that sort of stuff sampled, because they're a wonderful resource for knowing the what, where's, why's, and when's of your local microclimate.
And a lot of times in certain areas, there'll be colleges that have agriculture
right.
programs.
Right.
And you can
exactly.
take your dirt to them and they'll test it. But
yep.
what I have also found, too, is let's say you didn't have a storm in your area, but you're like, well, I don't know. You know, we live in an area. I have a friend. They live in an area, and it used to be an old bakery, and then down the street there's like a soldering factory. And I'm like, okay, so that to me tells me a long time ago there was metals and stuff and Lord knows whatever else in that soil. So don't expect that, you know, now that we have the earth and we say that its topsoil is going away, well, if its topsoil is going away, what do you think is under there? It's not like
right.
it's this great stuff underneath. You know, you're uncovering all of these other things that are getting into your food. And many people have said, oh, well, that doesn't get into your food. It's no big deal. It does. So I'm here to say it does.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anybody pull that over you. If the soil is not good, if it has been contaminated, you're getting it in your food.
Right. And so it is good to know if there is contamination in your soil. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, so then, you know, some of the options that you have, if you do have contaminated soil, you can grow in the containers is one option.
Right.
Or find out ways that you can naturally get rid the soil of those, oftentimes by planting something like a particular cover crop that will uptake some of those contaminants, is another option for you.
Right. You can revitalize it by growing them out and then, you know, mm-hmm. for several seasons and then kind of clear it out.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So as while you're doing that, grow in the containers, and then once you've cleared it all out, then you can use the actual soil. And adding a lot of that organic matter back into the soil in the cover crop that you're growing, or the green manure is another word for that,
mm-hmm.
That's really increasing the health of the soil as well. So there's lots of benefits to cover cropping. But then, as far as the starting of seeds go, you know, as the actual
right.
starting of your vegetables, mm-hmm. there's basically two things to keep in mind. Well, there's more than two, but there's a few things. The primary thing is which certain types of vegetables prefer to be started directly in the soil, outdoors, or in a container, whereas others prefer or sometimes need to be started indoors and then transplanted out as a seedling later on in the season. So some examples of types of vegetables that can be started directly outdoors, beans and peas are great. The root crops, things like carrots, radishes, beets, parsnips, those all really prefer to be started outdoors directly, direct seeded outdoors. And then there's other things like cucurbits. And when I say cucurbits, I mean things like cucumbers, squash, watermelons, melons. They really prefer to be started directly sown as well, simply because they have tap roots that don't like to get disturbed. So that doesn't mean that you can't start them indoors, but if you are going to start them indoors, what I would recommend is starting them in a larger container than you normally would. Maybe like a 4-inch pot would be a good thing for one of the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that seedling germinates, you want to make sure to transplant it out no more than like 3 to 4 weeks after the seed germinates, because, again, you don't want that taproot to get wound up in the pot and to get pot bound, and then really it would stress the plant out. And so, you know, then there's other things like lettuce, for example, which could be started indoors or outdoors. But whether you start it indoors or outdoors, I guess you want to make sure to keep in mind the soil temperature and the soil moisture. It's really important to keep the soil moist until the seed germinates, but you don't want it to drown it. You know, you don't want standing water in the soil. And then the temperature is really dependent on the type of seed again. Lettuce is another one that will germinate at very, very cool soil temperatures, whereas something like a watermelon, sometimes you need a 70 to 80 degree soil temperature. And soil temperature is different than air temperature, too. So keep that in mind, because, you know, inevitably in the spring we get the first nice day, and then people think that they can go out and plant corn, which is another thing that likes warm soil temperatures.
But is soil temperature, how far down do you have to assume that that soil temperature is?
Really how far deep you would plant the seed. So most seeds, it's going to be in the top inch. So if you get a soil thermometer, which is another tool that I highly recommend, it's one of my tools that I'm a very frugal gardener, honestly, but a soil thermometer is definitely something that I find important, and they're also not very expensive. But if you put it down in an inch or two, that should be suitable for finding an accurate soil temperature.
Right, because you don't want to be putting it something on a bed of something that's much colder and darker, and it just sits there and rots.
Exactly. Yep. Corn is a perfect example. We always get calls in the late spring, and people said that I planted my corn 2 weeks ago, and nothing's come up, and I looked in the ground, and the seed has rotted. And again, you know, it's sometimes one of the reasons why I enjoy gardening so much is because sometimes it pays to wait and not be, you know, the first in the ground type of thing. Sometimes it pays to be a little bit lazy. And once that soil temperature is warmer, that seed is just, for the corn in particular, it's just going to sprout up, germinate, and continue to grow. Or, you know, conversely, a tomato is something that you would want to start indoors first from seed, just because it really requires a bit longer time, and so if you were to direct seed it, chances are you wouldn't have very high yields. So again, people that start their tomato plants early, get them out into the ground. If if you don't get a frost, the tomato plant will be fine in the ground. But unless it's warm, it's just going to sit there, and it's not going to do anything, and it's going to get stressed out. And so it's another reason why I like to wait until it just warms up a little too. Of course, you want to make sure that, you know, all danger of frost has passed by the time you would put a tomato plant out or protect it somehow. But yeah, those are the types of things that you need to keep in mind when choosing the variety, where you start it, and when you start it.
Let's talk about water, because you know what? Mm-hmm. So many people are having issues these days on what they're drinking, and they tend to put what their water is that they would drink on some of these plants. And I know some people have said, well, we only have reverse osmosis in our house, and we're going to water our plants like that. Mm-hmm. Well, reverse osmosis is dead water, and you just put dead water on your plants, and then you're wondering why your plants are dead, you know? You also look at... when we lived in Pennsylvania, the hose, you know, I call it the hose, you know, outside the spigot. Anyway, it would we as kids always drank the water when we were outside because it was hot. But I can remember to this day the metallic taste.
I know.
And it was so strong in the Northeast. I mean, you know, and you wonder, do you put that or do you not put that? So what do you do about water? I mean, that's so simple.
Right. And it really does depend on where you're living and what type of water system and how it's cleaned and purified and all of that type of stuff that does make it important as to how you want to do it. Again, you know, as a general rule, I'd say if you feel comfortable drinking it, then it's certainly okay to put onto your plants, assuming that, again, like you were saying, the reverse osmosis or something like that.
That's like a huge no-no.
Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, I think it's pretty safe. You know, sometimes people that live in certain areas have high amounts of chlorine in their water. And so one way that you can do that is, you know, if you fill up a bucket of water and let it sit for a day or two before applying it to the plants, that's one way that you can eliminate that sort of issue.
I know what we did a lot of times is we fill up a bucket and we would just, like, leave it out in the morning and water the plants at night with it. So then that way in the sunlight, it had a chance to get rid of whatever it needed to do. But also, too, I think the concept of, you know, rainwater is the best if you can get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, shove those plants out if it's going to rain, you know, or watch where you're planting them.
Yes, it's funny because as soon as I stop talking, I'm like, how can I live in the Pacific Northwest where it rains for 8 months out of the year and not mention rainwater? Yes, collecting rainwater is a wonderful way to utilize resources, rainwater is certainly another great way to water your garden, absolutely.
Well, so many people don't even think about that. They're like, well, it rained outside, but I've got them on my porch, you know.
Right.
My mother used to be keen on this. Push them out in the rain, you know, it's going to rain today. Push everything out, you know, or, you know, and you just got kind of in that habit.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we also wanted to touch, we're coming up on 20 minutes left or so, and I wanted to touch about GMOs, and if you can give me an idea of what your thoughts are on that, about safety, not safety, and why is it such a big deal anymore, and how your company does or does not participate in that.
Sure. We do not offer any genetically modified seed, and, you know, it's something, there's a safe seed pledge, where if you go to our website, territorialseed.com, and click on the About Us link on the homepage, it kind of describes what the Safe Seed Pledge is. And quite honestly, you know, in a nutshell, we don't think that it is necessary. And, you know, the potential dangers of genetically modified organisms is such that we've said, okay, we're going to not offer these. It's just not something that we're interested in. It's not something that our customers are interested in for the most part. And in fact, you know, we get asked that question a lot as to whether or not we have GMO seed. And it's simply because people are concerned about what they're eating. And my personal opinion is that we certainly have a right to know what we're putting into our bodies. And so, yeah, that's just not something that would interest us at all.
And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'll just get my fruits and vegetables from the local grocery store. You know, I myself have been down this route a bazillion times also. Getting it from the local grocery store, and my example is in January, mm-hmm. of this past year. All the citrus grows here. I live in the South. Everybody's got trees outside and stuff. But you know what? They don't eat them from the trees, and I have no clue why. But they'll go to the local, you know, Walmart or Whole Foods or the regular grocery store, and they'll get them there. Little do they even pay attention to look at the sticker on the food. And if it has four numbers, that means conventional. That means with pesticides or potential GMO, you don't know. And all of these other things. So if it's growing outside in your backyard and you didn't spray it and you didn't do anything to it, maybe why would you not eat that? And then going to these other stores and you're looking at it and it's got four numbers and it says it's from South Africa in January. So in January, do you go outside and pick some off your tree? Or do you go buy something from South Africa?
Now, I would certainly hope.
Go there. Let's go there and think about that. And you know what? They don't think about that. How can you suggest to someone to pay attention to that?
Right. I mean, I guess the, you know, one point that I would like to bring up is that there are plenty of reputable small farms local that are great resources. But as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't get any more local than your own backyard. And
right.
So I definitely think that it's important not only for the nutritional value, because you know that something that's getting transported from Africa to the southern United States is going to lose its nutritional value, or was probably harvested not at peak time because it's going to be transported. And so, there's so many benefits, really. I mean, you know, the nutritional value, and then just knowing what it is that you're eating, it's so important.
Right. So if we live here in the southern part of the U.S., mm-hmm. I want to know exactly, if I'm looking at an orange and it looks the orange color, and I say, pick it up, the first thing I always do is check the sticker. The second thing I always do is see where it came from in the country. Third thing I do is smell it. And I can tell you, they don't have a smell. So, I mean, of course they couldn't. How could they possibly? Because you go to the store and say, I'm going to get it today and I'll eat it today because it'll be the freshest today. But not really true. That thing was picked in South Africa on the tree, which it was deriving its nutrition from,
mm-hmm.
maybe 2-3 months ago, stuck in a warehouse. Then in transportation, those things get gassed so they can ripen on the way. And gassed only means that they can attain the color. So, you know, why is it not more important to be growing something of your own to get it at peak with the antioxidants? I don't think an orange from South Africa, you know, that was made or whatever it was 3 months ago is going to have the same amount of vitamin C as the same orange that I would pick off my tree.
Right. Absolutely. And not to mention, you know, you talked about transportation. Look at all the fossil fuels and the resources that are used
right.
to get that orange from Africa or wherever, you know, to your grocery store versus the much smaller carbon footprint that you're making by growing that orange, if you're lucky enough to be able to grow citrus in your own backyard, right in your backyard. Yeah.
And even if, like we said, if you can just grow one little thing, and if I just grew lettuce and I got all mm-hmm. my vitamins from that, you would have such a much better diet, and you'd feel so much better, and you'd have it from yourself.
Right. And I think that it's also important for us to know what is involved in growing in producing our own food. And then you also, I mean, you have the whole aspect of children, and mm-hmm. I firmly believe that they're much more likely to eat their vegetables if it's growing in their own backyard and they get to take part of it or take part in the process. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing better as an adult for me to go out and eat some fresh peas off of a plant, let alone a child, that they really gain an appreciation for that type of stuff rather than just going to a grocery store and saying, this is where your food comes from.
You know, so many times I can remember growing up, and we always had a garden in the back, and my mother would always put us out in the morning, you know, I'll see you when the sun goes down. And we're like, we're hungry, we need to come in. She says, there's a garden out there, go eat.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know,
exactly.
And that was the answer. Go find something. You know, don't
Absolutely.
Tell me you're hungry. There's tons of food right there.
Right. Interestingly enough, my mom would make gardening a chore for me, and so oftentimes it's funny how you know, I would moan and groan about it when I was a child, and now I've decided to pursue a career in it. So it's funny how that works.
Well, you know, I can say, too, about the seeds. You know, a lot of people are asking, well, what do seeds mean? Well, I can honestly tell you, in the spring catalog, there is an astronomical amount of seeds. When you look at the catalog, it's got 166 pages in it for the spring of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than one type of seed on each page. There's about four or five on each page. So if you can't find something that you'd like to try or something that you'd be so interested in putting in the ground, I think you'd be at a loss to say, I couldn't find anything here.
It's true. You give me a call and we'll discuss the issue.
Right.
What am I doing wrong?
And also, do you have a support system there where people may just be starting out to do a garden and they're like, lost, what do I do?
Absolutely.
Or do you
First of all, classes? We occasionally have local classes, yes. But what we really try to pride ourselves on is that in both the paper catalog and our website, we offer a ton of growing information. We have on our website in particular, which is, again is territorialseed.com, we have a lot of instructional videos. So it'll show you how to start seeds indoors. It'll show you how to grow root crops. It'll show you how to grow garlic. But then it, in our paper catalog, we have a lot of at the beginning of each type of vegetable, we have a whole culture block that tells you the how-tos from start to finish, really, from seeding to harvesting, all the information that you need to grow those particular types of vegetables. And then, you know, even calling, we get people emailing and calling us with gardening questions all the time. And fortunately, we have a great customer service crew here, the gardens themselves, that can help answer those questions.
So there is help if you're not, you know, if somebody says, well, I'm looking through this, I have no clue. All I know is it looks pretty. What do I do then, you know?
Yeah. And that's, you know, I guess one piece of advice that I would like to give to new gardeners or people that haven't tried it before is to start small. It's amazing how overwhelming it can get because our eyes are oftentimes bigger than our gardens, I guess you could say. And it's important to start small and don't get overwhelmed because that can easily turn someone off to gardening. And so I think that it is important to start small. Again, fall and winter are great months to read up on the how-tos of things and what will grow well and what you want to try and this, that, and the other, so that come springtime you can be well prepared to get started.
And there's a lot of information in the catalogs, too, about different ways of growing. You have grow lights and tables and covers, and you have a lot of seed pots and everything. So this is not, I'm just going to buy seeds from you, and then I have to figure out where to get all my other supplies. You do have a lot of supplies also listed here.
Yes, we have garden accessories that help you get the seed started, and then natural fertilizers and things to combat some of the pests that we have to deal with. All of those things are available, as well as tools for gardening, like if you wanted a hoe or a shovel or all that type of stuff is available through the catalog.
And then what I also liked is you also had information for after the fact.
Yes.
You have things like steamers and how to do all those other things with your food when you get a whole lot of it. What do I do with it next?
Right. That's when, I mean, you want to talk about rewarding. You spend your the season growing these things. You get them to grow well, and then you have an abundance of fruit. Then what do you do with it, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it is so – that's one of the things that on a personal level over the past few years, every year I try to do a little bit more food preservation, and it is a really, really rewarding and wonderful way to finish things off.
And you also have seeds for flowers and herbs too,
yeah.
So it's not just fruits and vegetables.
Yes, correct. We do have an extensive line of flowers and herbs so that you can have well-seasoned meals with all the vegetables that you're growing.
Yeah. All you really need to do then is just go to the bakery and then go to the butcher and you're finished.
Right, exactly.
And isn't that the way it's always supposed to be, right?
Indeed, yes. See, now I'm hungry. So we've done a good job because I'm officially hungry, so that's good.
Well, you know, and I looked through the thing, too, and it's like all of these different colors. I mean, how would you know how many different colors you could have a cauliflower? Could you actually think you could have something that's orange and called sunset? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, all you think of is the plain old, you know, white stuff that might be growing mold on in the grocery store.
Exactly.
I still can't get over that. You know, I don't know how many cooking shows on TV I've seen, and they've pulled out the cauliflower and put it on the counter. And they, I watched one of the very, very famous chefs put their hand over the mold on it because they knew it shouldn't have been there, you know. And
right.
It was like,
right.
Okay, something's wrong here.
Yes. And that's, you know, cauliflower is one of those things, like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale. Those are types of things that also like cooler temperatures to grow in. And so that's one of the things that with our fall and winter catalog that we really try to promote heavily, just because they do very, very well in fall or in spring when it's not too hot. And I actually was out at our trial grounds last week and harvested a whole bunch of broccoli, and the cauliflower was just starting to come on, and I made some cabbage soup. And yeah, it's a wonderful time of the year. A lot of folks think, oh, well, my tomatoes are dead now because it frosted, so there's nothing else I can do in the garden, but there is plenty still to do.
Well, you know, you have like 6 pages of ton different kinds of peppers. And if anybody out there who is listening would love to experiment with any of those and you get a surplus crop, I'll be happy to give you my address and you can just box those up.
Oh, that's good to know if we ever have any of our trials.
I absolutely love those.
Oh, good.
Peppers,
do you like sweet peppers or hot peppers?
Oh, all kinds. There's not a one pepper you couldn't give to me that I didn't know. When I grew up, my father and I, we would go down to the Amish and we would get a bushel every Friday. Mm-hmm. And on the way home, we would be eating the green peppers out of the bushel by ourselves. We just take them out and eat them. That's how we ate them.
Wow.
You know, when you're as a kid and you're hungry and you learn that, you tend to bring that forward.
Absolutely. Well, then, since you like peppers so much, I'll let you and your listeners in on a secret about one of our new varieties for 2013, because right now we're, you know, very, very busy getting ready for our new catalog that goes to press in just a few weeks. But next year we're going to be offering the ghost pepper, which is, you know, purported to be one of the hottest peppers in the world.
Really?
Yeah, very, very, very hot. And it has a really interesting ghost shape pepper to it. So, you know, you'll definitely see that in the picture that we took. But, if you like your peppers hot, then that is a very, very good choice for you, because it's about as hot as they come in the pepper world.
Goodness.
Yes.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if we're going to try that.
You just said that any pepper that is handed to
you. I know, but I, you know, those hot ones. It's not like I'm 20 years old again.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. I hear you.
Yes, but that's good to know. But I mean, a lot of people need to know that, because they'll say, "I don't," you know, and you have to think about the safety. Do you really want to touch it if you're older?
Right.
You can't see what you're doing. You know, you need to. Gardening is great, but you take your precautions too. So
absolutely.
By you testing that out and telling them that versus just going to a store and picking it up off the rack, you know, it makes a huge difference.
Right. And that's a great point, because, you know, just touching a hot pepper can, and you know, then you rub your eyes. So if you have children around or something, that's another thing to consider when growing those types of things too. Very good point.
You know, we talked about, can we talk just briefly for a minute or two about sprouts? I know everybody is thinking it's great. You know, this juicing craze. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of kale, so don't anybody send me kale.
I'll convert you, I promise.
Oh, I know. But this, you know, this thing with the juicing and all, and they're like, oh, well, I'm sprouts, this, that, and the other. And you think, oh, you know, I don't know, I get that little curdle in my stomach that says, oh, boy, I'm not going to eat them at your house. Or am I going to buy them from the grocery store? And, Lord, how long have they been there? And, ooh, they smell funny.
Yeah. One of the, you know, we used to have a very extensive line of sprouts, because sprouts are very nutritious for you, and there's so many different types that, you know, the days of just the alfalfa sprout are long gone. There are plenty of them that we used to offer. We aren't offering them anymore, and it's simply because our supplier of the sprouting seed, there's been some scares and some issues about food safety. And so they do not want to sell us them anymore, just because, quite honestly, they don't want to be liable for them. But there's still, you know, you can certainly grow your own sprouts still. You definitely want to make sure that you're using seed that is specifically suited for sprouting, not just going and getting a packet of something at the store, because the seed that is made, or, you know, suited for sprouting has been tested to make sure that there are no foodborne diseases on them, and they've been processed in a manner where they're not, you know, touching equipment that you wouldn't want to, you know, ingest shortly after the seed has germinated. So it is very important, and it's also important once you start growing them that you follow rules and sanitary and cleanliness and all of that type of stuff. But there's certainly plenty of sprouting seeds available. There's lots of equipment still, and it's still really, really nutritious for you. You just got to do it in the right manner.
Right, and it definitely is something that you have to know what you're doing. You can't be dabbling in that.
Correct.
And,
correct.
You know, risk being sick and then saying, oh, I'll never do it again. It was the problem, and maybe the problem was just yourself, and the problem wasn't, you know, with all that.
Yep.
You know, and definitely your catalog. So for the listeners, if you are interested at all, you know, it's really cool. I even pulled up Swiss chard. And did you ever know that there's one that's called Bright Lights or Magenta Sunset or even the Golden Chard? I mean, really, everybody just thinks the Swiss chard is this green stuff that just plops on the dish and looks really super unappetizing as it turns brown. You know, so there's some really great, great different kinds here. And potatoes even. I mean, they have these tiny, tiny potatoes in a, called oca, and they're little tiny, and they're, look, actually, they look like cherries, you know, in their catalog. You'd almost think that they were Northwestern cherries. So there's a whole lot of different things in the catalog. You know, if you really want to try something super and out there, this is definitely the place to go. Or to find out definitely about things that are easy for you to grow. So can you give us some information about what is on your website, Josh, and how they can order and if they have any problems?
Sure. So first of all, I should also mention our catalog is completely free. So if you go to our website, which is territorialseed.com, on the left-hand side, there's a button that says get a free catalog, and that's where you can sign up. So you can get that. You can certainly browse the entire catalog on our website, and you can certainly order from our website, too. So there's lots of different options. Or if you want to call for a catalog, the toll-free number is 800-626-0866.
Great. So, and there's a lot of information there, too. If anybody has any questions, you'll see all different tips and a lot of tools and maybe, you know, if, when to put things in the ground, when to not put things in the ground. There is a ton of information on the website. And so what is maybe one or two things that you'd say, what is one product if I was going to be my first product in the ground and I lived in a cool climate, what would I look at?
Oh, good question. I would go for a lettuce blend. The lettuce is really quite easy. It's a quick crop. And when I say that, I mean it, you know, within a month or two, you can start harvesting. And by getting a mix, you're going to get different colors, different types of lettuces. Like, you know, there's not just, certainly not crisp, just crisp heads. You have your loose leaves and romaines and butterheads. So going for a mix like that, it likes the cool soil temperature. You can just sprinkle the seed directly onto your garden bed. So my vote would be for a lettuce blend would be one.
Right.
And then maybe a bean. I think, you know, another one that likes, you know, beans like warm soil temperatures. And if you're new to gardening and wanted to try something that's fairly easy, you know, a nice bush bean, or if you have a fence or a trellis that you want to put some things up, a nice pole bean is another good and easy crop to give a try.
Great. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Josh. And this is Joshua from Territorial Seed Company. They are located in Oregon. However, they test every single seed. They can give you all of the information. You won't feel like you're left out in the lurch, and you won't be buying and putting things into the ground and saying you can't grow it because it looks dead. So thank you so much for being my guest today, Josh.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful talking with you, and I am officially hungry, and I'm going to go to lunch now.
Great. Thank you so much. And if anyone of the listeners would like more information about Joshua and Territorial Seed, it is available on the link on this page, on the show page. And if you need any more information from me, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. My website is outoftheboxhealthcare.com. And thank you for joining me today, and until tomorrow.